Welcome to episode of the Nintendo Entertainment Podcast. I am Triforce Todd, and joining me today is Wario Will.
Yeah, like, now we're in the, just pretty much in the middle of April right now. It's, yeah, we just came up from a solar eclipse. We're in the middle of April. We just come from Princess Peach. Yeah, I feel like it's kind of been eventful at the same time, not eventful. You get that feeling, listeners? Cohorts?
I'm not cohort. I'm the host, dang it. And I would glare at you evilly right now, but my eyes haven't exactly been the same since Monday. I'm not going to say that I directly stared into the eclipse when it happened, thinking I would get superpowers like in Heroes, but I also can't say I didn't not do that.
Yeah.
Cheerleader, save the world. Okay, here's the truth. I did look at the eclipse partially with my naked eyes. It wasn't fully eclipsed yet, so I just wanted to see if I could see it. I could tell around me that the eclipse was happening because, and I know this is going to sound weird, the shading was wrong. Like, if you looked at the world when the eclipse was happening, you'll notice that the light was starting to dim so much that the shading on all the objects you see every day was wrong. And I'm like, well, that's a funny effect. It's like if you were like playing with the color arc in like After Effects or Photoshop. You know, it was that kind of thing. So I go to my local bank because I needed to deposit some money from the Comic-Con I just went to. And they were like, oh, we have the glasses. Do you want to look at it? I'm like, yeah, sure. So I go out and I just look through the glasses normally, like holding them out in my hands. I'm like, this doesn't make sense. Well, how is this going to work? So I put it over my eyes. I look up at the eclipse and there's like just enough sunlight that looks like a thumbnail. And I'm just like, oh, that is so cool. So that's what it's supposed to look like. And then I went home and I didn't think about it again until like people started posting their pictures of it. And I was just like, they get some really good pictures of the eclipse. It's really kind of weird, but whatever.
Right. We're going to like people get special glasses from the public, their own public libraries, yeah, or the such. Yeah.
But my eyes did not charcoal over, and I screamed in agony like Invader Zim during his eclipse episode. Real. Yeah. But if you hurt your eyes, it's your own dang fault. Speaking of being your own dang fault, Scott's here.
Yes. I mean, my great eyes are already destroyed, so even if I looked at it, it probably wouldn't have done much more damage.
Yeah. Like, my eyes! My eyes!
The fact that thing was also trending on Twitter X is like, really? You haven't learned your lesson over the past, like, the last major solar eclipse?
7 years ago. Yeah. And like, I kid you not, I saw an actual, like, credited publication note that eye damage across the country spiked over because of the eclipse. I'm just like, how stupid are you people? Like, I was okay because I just like glimpsed at it just to see if I could see the eclipse.
Yeah.
But then I looked away. I didn't like intensely stare at it.
Exactly. I didn't try to like, even if you're like even the weakest of shades, like you're not supposed to do that. Like if it hurts, look away immediately. Don't like inflict pain unless you're the masochist that you are, which I guess some people are.
There are a few of those. Maybe more than a few, actually.
Yeah, more than a few. Pain is your friend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, spicy food, solar eclipse, pick your poison.
So, all right. We got an interesting show for you today, including a fun main event that I look forward to hearing from the others on. But first, what have you been playing? I'll go first because I've honestly had a very light gaming week. I was at Comic-Con during the eclipse, which ironically was called Eclipse-Con. Surprise.
Nice.
Yeah.
Very on the nose.
It was, but like there's a reason for this. The first time they did this con was in 2017 when when the previous eclipse happened. Then they changed to SalukiCon because they were at a Southern Illinois University. And I've been going there basically every year except for the pandemic years, and I missed last year because of timing. But so they changed it back to EclipseCon because it was about the eclipse. And it was a good show. I did a good job. I sold a lot of books, and there were some really great cosplays there. For you Naruto fans, I saw a really great Madara complete.
Oh, nice.
And that fan was heavy. Like, it was full size, it was heavy, and they were buying one of my Sherlock books, and I held it for them, and I was like, wow, this has got a heft. And then I paused, and I went, now wait a minute. And she looked at me, and I go, if I was to own this, wouldn't that make it my biggest fan? Yes! I did that! The cosplay I was surprised to see was Jinx. Like, League of Legends, there were multiple Jinxes.
Oh, okay.
And course, I had a completely different idea of Jinx.
Okay, which Jinx were you thinking of?
Pokemon.
Oh, no, that would have been... I would have taken...
That would have been a bit much.
I don't think I've ever seen a Jinx cosplay. I mean, I've seen, like, you know, Pikachus, I've seen some Charizards, I've seen... Ooh, what have I seen? I've seen, like, obviously Pokemon trainers, Officer Jenny. Oh, Officer Jenny was there. I know that one. No, I definitely haven't seen the Jinx. That'd be a bold choice. That's a bold choice. Remember, that is... Isn't that canonically the Succubus Pokemon?
Like, so I think.
Yeah.
Yes.
It was so controversial that they made Smoochum to make it seem less controversial. And I'm like, but no, that's the opposite effect, because it goes from a rather adorable Smoochum to Jinx. That's not a good transformation.
No.
So, but no, Jinx from League of Legends, there were multiple of her. There was a lot of really good ones out there. So for all of you who did go to SalukiCon, thank you. And we were actually worried that we wouldn't get to see the eclipse at all, because it was really cloudy on Sunday. And yes, I know, the eclipse was Monday. I'm just saying, you know, prelude to events. It was really cloudy. It was raining off and on. And then on the way home, I got hit by a storm that I can only describe as torrential. It was terrible. And it always seems to happen to me on my way home from cons. So annoying.
The hail and wind, like, oh, you can literally hear, like, it's just like like more or less it feels like a quarter inch to 3 inches of rain, like, splashing down right onto your car or what windows. Like, yeah, is this Rapture or something? I don't know. yeah
So, but it was a fun time. And then when I did get back, I had some, you know, personal stuff I needed to deal with, but I did get back to Baldur's Gate 3. And I finally entered Act 3 after getting the end of Act 2 shock of my life, where my, how do I put this gently, incredibly attractive, mature elf lady who's been serenading me with her voice every time the narrator talks, turned out to be a mind flayer.
Yep.
I mean, I kind of felt that was what was going to happen, because, I mean, like, when you get to pick your dreamy narrator / dream visitor, it rarely goes well. Like, let's be honest. And then it's like, no, I was a dream visitor. It's just like this incredibly male mind flayer. I'm just like, I am disappointed.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, I know it's my fault for picking an incredibly seductive looking elven, you know, gonna use another word here, but I wasn't. I think Will knows the word I was gonna go for.
Yeah, dream wife. It's pretty much like in Baldur's Gate 3, is either be your dream wife or dream daddy. That's pretty much it.
That's accurate. And then, of course, you have your real waifu that I'll get to in a sec. But but yeah, I basically made a dream waifu, and then it's like, no, I'm just a mind flayer. I'm like, well, suck. To which some of you were saying, no, that comes later. Shut up. But yeah, the end of Act 2 was very surprising, and I liked how they handled it. I love how this game is handled in general, but I just entered Act 3, and I'm going to tell you now the very real series of events that happened once I entered Act 3. I found the outskirts of Baldur's Gate. Nice place. I find a circus dude, and Karlach is excited to go to the circus. So, of course, I am going to do whatever my Karlach wants, so we go to the circus. So we start talking around, and eventually I see an autosave. I'm like, oh, autosave, something big's about to happen. And it's a clown show. And I'm like, oh, okay, this is interesting. And he goes, hey, we need a volunteer. And they point to me. How about you, sir? I'm like, nah, send Karlach. And you wanted to go to the circus, you have to reap this. And then it's like, oh, the clown's evil. The clown is attacking me. So are a whole bunch of creatures. I am going to kill this clown. I killed the clown, and I am happy. So, didn't see that coming. I mean, it wasn't even a real clown. It was a shapeshifter as a clown, and I have to go find the real clown for a character who I can only define as the D&D version of RuPaul.
Yep.
Where's the lie?
There is none.
There is none. But I will find that clown just because I'm curious. But yeah, I didn't see that coming. And then as I'm leaving the circus, I find this one lady who basically is like the D&D version of Poison Ivy. And it goes, I will see if your love to your your beloved is true. And I'm like, and Karlach is, of course, infinitely excited about this. So I'm like, oh, this is nice. Let's do this. And so, of course, I show my true love to Karlach. I do save, but I don't have to reload. I got every question right the first time. Karlach is my soulmate. You are welcome. And then, of course, it's revealed, oh, that's not Poison Ivy. That's the Blood Witch Orin. And she's like really freaky and like obsessed with death in a way that's just not hot at all. And yep. So, hey, yes, there is a way to be obsessed with that while being hot. I'm not picky. But so, yeah, that was weird. But like, that's what I love about this game, because I'm like, oh, this is a test to see if me and Karlach are true loves. And it's like, no, this is just a twisted test of a Blood Witch. And it's like, it's so mean. It's so mean. But I love this game. This is so much fun. And even though I'm just into Act 3, I can't wait to see where it goes, because there's so many things I got to do with all the characters and all that. There is one thing I do want to note, though, about Karlach, and it has to do with, wait for it, a cosplay. Because you might remember, ladies and gentlemen, that over the past few weeks, I have noted that if I saw a 7-foot-tall-ish Karlach cosplayer, I would probably define her as the perfect woman and a goddess and ask her to marry me. So last Friday was there was a wrestling show, Ring of Honor. Supercard of Honor.
Yeah,
you know where this is going. And their champion is a woman named Athena. And she's been their champion for almost 500 days. And she's awesome. She's a great wrestler, great personality, epic. And so this was a big match for her. She was going against a longtime rival from her past. And so they had their entrances. And she came out in Karlach attire, complete with fire-filled entrance and a battle axe. And then she has a shirt called Barbarian, where she stands over her fallen enemies during her reign. And it was incredible. I love that. I even tagged Larian Studios in the video so they could see it. IGN actually wrote an article about it because it was so awesome. And you might be thinking, well, wait a minute, Todd. Since this Athena woman dressed up as Karlach, doesn't that make her the perfect woman? Well, no. She ain't 7 feet tall. So close. For the record, she's also married, and she's also happily married, and I'm completely happy for her on that front. But I'm just saying, like, she's close. Like, she's close to the perfect woman, but she's not 7 feet tall, Karlach. But the fact that she did a Karlach cosplay was just so awesome. I totally popped off. I'm just like, Karlach! So yeah, good times, great Baldur's Gate, epic Karlach. What more can you ask for? So, but I will have this weekend open, so I will definitely be diving back into Baldur's Gate. I absolutely look forward to it. When you look forward to just spending like the tiniest amount of time in the game, you know it's a good game.
Yes.
Like, we can all think of games like that. But like this one, just I didn't expect that. This wasn't on my most wanted list. This wasn't the game that I said, oh, I absolutely have to get Baldur's Gate 3. I got it at Christmas because I'm like, I'll have time to play it and I might like it. You know, everyone was saying, Todd, you know, Baldur's Gate's really great if you like D&D. I'm like, but I didn't really play D&D. You know, it wasn't really my kind of style. And well, once I got into it and I got used to the mechanics, it was great. And a great example was with the clown fight. When the clown fight started, there were a lot of enemies. There was a lot of health going around, and I wasn't in a good position to fight all of them. And I'm like, is this going to be like another like repeat saving? And actually, I didn't. I only had to reload a few times just because I hate missing attacks. I absolutely hate missing attacks. It's so annoying. But I just kept calm. I stuck to my strategy. I picked them off one at a time. I used a special scroll to whittle 3 enemies down at one point. Used a blade of a cloud of arrows to deal lots of damage over time. And it was an easy win. And I did that because I was just like, I knew my team. I knew the damage I could do. And I just trusted them. And we got it done. So that's how it's supposed to be. And that's why I really love this game. So, well, that and Karlach. So that should be my next feature. Why is Karlach the best woman in gaming?
Bold statement.
Screw you, Laura Croft. Bayonetta, oh please. Stellar Blade, well, we haven't seen her release yet, so I can't judge her fully.
Who that will be like the age of a good argument. Who would win? Karlach or Samus Aran?
Samus. It's not even close. Look, as much as I dig Karlach and she is wow. Samus has better range, space age weaponry, and stuff that could totally wreck Karlach. That's just the truth. I mean, missiles alone could keep the whole fight at long range, while Karlach's got arrows that won't pierce her armor. And if we do zero suit Samus, that's just cheating. So come on. I love Karlek, and Samus is easily like one of the best characters ever, but Samus wins. I mean, this is fantasy versus space age. Now, if you said, like, being generous here, like Will, you could make that argument because he's got some really powerful magic. But again, would that get through the Varia armor? And I don't think it would. But that's another topic entirely.
I mean, it would have been a great death battle idea, but unfortunately, death battle is
It's not over yet. It's not over yet.
There's still hope somewhere.
somewhere out there in the vast space of the internet. You know, that's actually something we should do is like waifu wars.
bring that back. I wouldn't mind.
Oh yeah, Scott, that was like episode 3 or 4, we did like our favorite waifus ever, and so we should bring that back and say, okay, which of these waifu characters would actually win in a fight? Like that could be fun, and it probably hopefully not misogynistic, but
yeah.
Before we get really off the rails, Scott, what have you been playing?
Alrighty, so I've been testing out a new controller that I'm gonna be running about next week. So I've been playing a lot of variety of games. I tried first off with some of the Musou games, like Dynasty Warriors.
Okay.
I also played the Musou equivalent game of Neptunia, Action Unleashed, and Neptunia and Sandra and Kagura of Ninja Wars. And I also went through a few tests with like Dragon Ball Z Xenoverse.
Okay.
So I've been testing with a lot of different types of games. I mean, I didn't play a lot of them like a lot of the time. But I also did still continue my run in Dragon's Dogma 2.
Oh, okay.
And I mean, it's still kind of chaotic, but it's even more chaotic because you just have people talking, like, you can have other players, like, pawns enter your world and just talk to you for things. And one of them literally did come to talk to me. It was, like, level 70 that I was allowed to, for some reason, hire. But I'm guessing it's because I'm, like, level 10. So if you're, like, below a certain threshold, you might not have to pay for something too upper leveled.
Yeah, can I just note, have you seen the Yahtzee video about it?
I don't think I have.
Okay, well, he really hates that game. He at one point apparently didn't save properly or something.
Oh, yeah.
And he lost 4 hours of time, and so he realized, oh, there was an autosave that I can go back to, and then the game autosaved on him.
Yep.
And so he's just like, you know, screw you, Dragon's Dogma. You already lost me, but now I'm just gonna throw it away. Like, and he did. So he said it was way too chaotic, and I've heard that from a lot of people, not just you. So
yeah. So I imagine Dragon's Dogma 2 is not a game for everybody. I think it's fun, but I also think that I could probably get a little too much going. And yeah, I've heard of other people's stories of losing their saves because they decided to go to the inn instead of going on the most recent checkpoint, thinking that they saved beforehand, but, you know, didn't. Which is terrible because there's only one save slot in Dragon's Dogma 2, so if you go to the wrong save, that other save that there was no longer there.
Wow.
So it's problematic in that way. I just always go to the most recent checkpoint, even if it's right next to like the boss or whatever enemy I'm fighting. I'll just run away, which I have done a few times. Like I accidentally strolled into a troll, and it instantly autosaved because I was like next to a troll, and I'm like, oh no. And so I first decided to see how much damage I could do. Very little, because I was like level 8, and I don't know what level these trolls are supposed to be, but more than 8. And so I died. I went to the most recent checkpoint. It was right before the troll, so I went to the troll and then ran. Just ran through it to try to get to the next checkpoint that I need to get to.
Which, as long
as like the troll gets distracted on something else, which in this case he was distracted by a group of wolves that were supposed to be attacking us, but then attacked the troll instead, so the troll attacked the wolves back. So they were fighting each other as we were running away. So they got distracted with each other so that we were able to run away, which was nice. But you also have to make sure to tell your pawns to like not attack things. Otherwise, they'll start attacking the level 30 trolls that are just randomly there.
The giant
harpies in the sky that you didn't know was there, but then your archers start shooting at something in the sky, and you're like, what the heck is that? And then it descends on you.
Yeah, like when your NPC teammates like attack, like, no, don't attack us! Jeez Louise, like, At least, I don't know, like, probably a poor comparison, like Xenoblade Chronicles X, like, at least your NPC doesn't attack out of nowhere unless you personally engage them, but, yeah. Or any other JRPG out there. But no, when NPCs actually have a free will of its own, like, no, don't do it!
Don't bring up Xenoblade Chronicles X. Me and Scott are still in mourning, because we're totally not getting that port. We're not getting the port, Scott.
Maybe Switch 2.
My dream at this point. All my dreams are dying, as Will reminded me with Death Battle. Thanks a lot, Will. It's not over yet.
One day.
Continue.
So, yeah, Dragon's Dogma 2 is still fun, but also it's very chaotic, and it is definitely not a game for everyone. If you get frustrated because it doesn't have, like, Life of Quality features, or if you get frustrated due to, like, poor optimization or just random frames, because, again, Dragon's Dogma 2 goes from, like, a 40 frames to, like, 70 frames per second experience depending on your PC.
Mm-hmm.
And it is not very consistent, and you can't... I mean, there are ways that you can kind of lock the frames with external hardware and software, but inside the actual game itself, it's really complicated to try to lock your frames down. The consoles are locked to 30 frames or also uncapped, so that doesn't really help, which most of the other consoles are at like 30 to 40 frames per second kind of a deal.
Mm-hmm.
And again, because it's so inconsistent, it feels kind of weird to play, because I will always say that 30 frames per second is fine as long as it's consistent. It's when frames start being inconsistent that the game starts to feel like a problem. When you get to like the 20 to 30 range and it's just all over the place, and you think you pressed the button right, but you didn't press the button within a certain time of the frame, and things happen.
Classic.
So it's annoying.
It's really sad that after, like, how many years of us having 30 frames per second as the standard, people are struggling to keep it that way. It's like, it's not a new thing. If you said, oh, we can't keep it at 60, that's understandable depending on, you know, the type of title, the platform, the team.
Yeah.
But when it's 30, which you've been doing for decades now,
yeah,
at least decades, like, you probably could do better than this.
You can absolutely do better than where we have been at sometimes. But...
yeah. Again, going back to the argument, why are people going back to retro games? Oh, I don't know, because they were complete games. I don't know.
Complete games. They don't require the day 4 patch to get this performance or this weird random story glitch to not be glitched.
Yeah, and like, oh, and back in my day, we had games that actually can run. I played the Nintendo 64, and that game ran smoothly at the time.
Whatever you say, Grandpa, get back in your chair.
But I also went back to actually Xenoblade Chronicles 3, too, for after forever.
I gotta do that too myself, yes.
Because I need to test the Switch, functionality of the controller, because the controller is... what I can tell, mainly a PC controller, but it has Switch compatibility.
Oh.
So I wanted to test the Switch compatibility, and it runs fine. There are some complaints I have with it, which when I'm done with the review, which will most likely be next week or maybe at the end of next week, depends on when I actually get to writing it. But it for the most part, is pretty serviceable. I like mostly what it does. It's a good controller. I'd have to make sure I need to see what the price point is when it comes out, but... it's pretty decent, and it's much better than the last controller I reviewed for them. So it's an improvement. Yeah.
But how close are you to being Xenoblade Chronicles 3? Because we need to talk about the thing.
Let's see. So I finished the castle when you meet the queen, and you get your goal, what your next goal is, and you have to figure out more about the actual power of Mobius kind of a deal.
Yeah, you got a long way to go.
Yeah, I still got, like, basically the whole chapter.
I've been sitting.
And it doesn't
this.
Help that I'm doing a lot of the hero quests that I was kind of skipping out on.
Yeah. That's more or less what I did before I went on hiatus a little bit, yeah.
I am all alone in knowing the truth, and I can't talk about the truth because I don't want to ruin it for you two. But it's, like, it's so sad because I want to talk about this for not the reasons you think, and I can't. And I know you do too. Don't know it because you haven't talked about me in private, which means you haven't seen what I have seen. So yeah, I'm waiting forever waiting.
We'll get there. Maybe this will be another way for me to actually get back on track now that I'm playing it again.
Oh yeah, I did a video on for another site of like the best JRPGs of all time. I put this at number 2, and I said I will die on this hill. Number 1 was Chrono Trigger.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that one.
So it's just like, yeah, I'm dying on this hill, ladies and gentlemen. I will die on this hill. I cried during this game. And like, I played a lot of JRPGs and they don't make you cry, but this one made me sob so dang hard. So that's feelings. All right. Anything else, Scott? Are you done?
Nah, that's mainly what I played that I can remember.
Will?
Well, personally for me, I've been continuing on with my trek of Unicorn Overlord, and yeah, I'm pretty much approaching the nearing to the end of the game. I'm currently like more or less just doing the last little final bits of side quests, as well as finally being in the Colosseum. And yeah, the Colosseum, I know that people can basically find ways to cheese it, be at low levels and all that, but yeah, just finding the combination, the right teams to like get past certain cavalry teams, whatever type of teams you encounter in the Colosseum is like a little bit of a pain, but thankfully I have managed to find like a good combination for with my main team, and actually finally defeated the champion and finally recruited Amalia, which, yeah, if you know Amalia, that was the person I was referring to last podcast.
the kind of Carlock.
Yes, and I guess in. I don't remember Carlock's foes behind the story, aside from the whole double deal and all that. But yeah, like Amalia's backstory, it's very reminiscent to I think it was like one of the story paths in Alive, if I recall correctly. I don't know, or another one of those martial arts films. Like it's very similar to that in a sense. But yeah, I also, aside from getting reached in the end, like the territory before that of Albion is like, yeah, like if you worry about games that have too much religious context, yeah, this game is probably not for you, because this game is full on religious context, which draws almost eerily parallel to reality. Like, oh, the orthodoxy of all things of like the father and all that. No, this game will reference everything. Like, if you know, like, I don't know, like, you know, Christianity, whatever the kind of religions that you encounter, like, oh, it's not going to be in here. Oh, they will reference everything. Like, Albion is, like, full on, like, yeah, religiously heavy-centric. And it will also include, like, some things regarding to certain heretical practices that it puts you in the morally gray area. So, and like in, like, a Dragon's Crown, prior, like, this game does not shy away from like really dark stuff.
Oh dang.
So like, yeah, like yeah, in a sense.
Not for the faint of heart is what you're saying. No,
I mean, technically they go into like they don't show you it, but it's more or less they tell you in implying detail, so it lets your imaginations run right in regards to that. So yeah, like let's just say regarding to certain youngins dying, if that thing gets you triggered, slight trigger warning there. Like, there is child deaths as well, so just slight trigger warning. I know, we're a Nintendo podcast. But yeah, either way, at the moment right now, yeah, just finishing up the last side quest, doing a simple trophy cleanup, if anything else. But, and just, of course, naturally, I'm just like seeing all the rest of the character endings, either be male or female. So if you're like that, like, don't worry, it's not in a 2024 thing, but it's more or less in a realm of like very bromance kind of deal. So
okay,
so don't worry more about that. But like the relationship at the endings, you can even give them the quote unquote ring of the maiden to your adoptive father. I know.
What?
Okay.
I know that was like I had to do a double take. What? I was like, okay. Like, sure, you could do a whole bromance thing, but you can also get the ring of the man to your adoptive father. Like,
you are my real father now. No.
It is like, okay. I mean, sure, that's the 2024 deal, all that. But again, it's up to interpretation. No? But don't worry, it's not romantically wise. So, or if you want to, it's up to you. Whatever is your preference. We don't judge here. But yeah, I'm just like considering who I should marry as my maiden, either be. But I'm torn between Amalia or Berengaria. Like, those two had very good, distinct endings, aside from, like, Scarlet. So, yeah. And, of course, I think there's also one more character I think you might find appealing, Todd, and that is one by Oclise, which is an angel warrior who is very much tsundere, which I know that is kind of like one of your other types Todd. So I don't know. Ocles.
He knows me so well. Looks her up. Okay, yeah, maybe. No. by the way, I did look up Amalia. She is definitely an imposing woman. Karlach is totally better though.
I don't know. Two different games.
This is true.
But yeah, overall, yeah. Again, Unicorn Overload. I'm enjoying my time. I will be approaching the ending soon, so hopefully, it just investing more time in regards to it. And so as of that, like, yeah, just. Overall, that's pretty much what mostly focused on. I mean, continuing on with Fire Emblem Heroes, which again we're right now in the Tempest Trials. Which, yeah. I just want to say, young Robin and Crom. Thank you. Like, thankfully, I have legendary male Allier to help counter those two because, like, yeah, that the young Crom is just wow. Wow, strong, but thankfully
they are so dang broken. Like I am furious with this Tempest Trials because usually I just like grind through whatever and I get my 50,000 points. I'm not doing that this time. I am so sick of that Crom Robin combination because like they can do an attack, then they can move and then attack you again.
Yeah, do the change of fate. Yeah, the change of fate with other Crom units. Yeah, like but this time is a magic type and it is hard.
Yeah,
it hits hard. So.
It's such bull crap, and it's like you know what? I've still got 800 orbs despite not getting Ike. Why didn't I get Ike?
I was about to ask you that question. Have you gotten Emblem Ike yet? Because I believe by the time of recording, I think tonight or tomorrow, that's when you're going to.
I gave up. I kept trying. I kept getting Embla instead, and I'm just like, I wasted like 200 orbs. I am not getting the Fae Pass just for this. So like, no, I'm good. I will just hope that I can get him in a random summon event or something. So.
Or if they do it back at a revival.
That too. Or they could do that. That was, I think, the Heroes Rising or whatever.
True. We could definitely vote him in, I don't know, wait next year and then, like, do a voting gauntlet again. And then, yeah, everyone gets a free Emblem Ike, which I think that probably is, like, the next possible deal. You probably will able to get that. So. We'll see. But so that's some Fire Emblem Heroes. It's like, yeah, overall, sometimes it's just been more or less been quite waiting for. Let's see. I know this April is obviously one of the other games that's coming up, which, like, everyone's been kind of talking about Stellar Blade that's coming out, I believe, on April 26th, if I recall correctly, on the correct date. And then, of course, naturally, next month is Thousand Year Door Remakes. So, yeah, definitely some interesting games to look forward if it's in your radar. So, and of course, naturally, people have been playing the demo of Stellar Blade so much, apparently like 69,000 hours. So, we'll see.
All right. So, with that, we will now move on to the news because, once again, we've had an interesting week of things to talk about. So, it's time to go down the warp pipe. And first, you people just can't let something die, can you? No. Because if you recall, last week we noted that the Wii U and 3DS online services were about to shut down, but apparently not, because you fans won't get off. So how did this go down, Will, exactly?
So, like, this is more or less a server. Like, even though the official online service for 3DS and Wii U are officially taken down from Nintendo, the fans, they find a way. And I'm pretty sure, like, this was even, like, more or less preparation before the eventual shutting down, basically by the place of Pretendo Network Service, or an FOSS replacement for Nintendo's servers for 3DS and Wii U. So, again, that is Pretendo. And basically, if you still have a Wii U or 3DS and you, like, still want to play Smash, Mario Kart, or Splatoon 1, on these like servers, you can still can. Or I believe, like, I'm not too familiar regarding to it. I haven't done the research. My apologies, but basically, like this Pretendo online servers, it basically helps keep longevity. So if you modded your I'm not sure if it's modded, but if you mod your like 3DS or Wii U, you can actually allow to play online games no problem. So even though officially it's dead, fans keep it alive. So, fans are doing what Nintendo doesn't.
Yeah, Pretendo was an online service that was initially started, like, I think a year ago. Okay. It was done for the homebrew scene, mainly to test out like homebrew apps from the Wii U and 3DS. And obviously, because of how those who mod their systems go, they also turned it into their own server for Super Smash Brothers and like the more popular online games that people can't play on the Switch, kind of a deal. That's not the same type of game. So now that the service is offline on Nintendo officially, there's a way to get it on your legitimate Wii U. I don't know if they were able to do it on the 3DS or not, but you can change your DNS service basically to just like mock the Nintendo service by putting in the Pretendo's DNS server. So it reads that as the real server instead of the Nintendo one, which doesn't matter because the Nintendo one's dead.
So yeah, like in the end, like yeah, if you still want to get some online matches with the Wii U, then yeah, like there is a scene for you people out there. They're still living even after the shutdown. So yeah, if you want to play Smash Brothers, Wii U, 3DS, or any other games that uses the internet services, including RIP Xenoblade Chronicles X. But so yeah, and that's kind of also one thing as well, because like with this as well, like even though it's shut down, we won't be able to see like special artwork like again the Miiverse or like the like the special artwork from Splatoon 1. I mean, I still remember like when it was shut down, everyone's like making celebratory artwork of Splatoon 1, like basically saying goodbye Splatoon 1, like they're moving, like seeing the Inklings going taking the last train out is like that's kind of sad, but heck, at least it's still living in some way. So yeah.
All right. So I mean, I applaud them for doing their thing and keeping it alive. So as long as you're not breaking any laws, by all means. All right. Next up, we have a short but sweet piece of news, which is about the Super Mario Brothers movie 2. It will release on April 2nd. April 2026. So we got a little bit of a wait, but you know, it takes time to make movies, especially animated movies. So give it time.
And let's just hopefully another impending epidemic, worldwide epidemic affects us again, or I don't know, a certain strike or some other random outside celestial factor. I don't know.
There's always things that can happen between now and then.
Yeah. And you know, and if we're really, really, really lucky, not only will it go smoothly, a certain Chris Pratt won't be Mario anymore. So, to dream. And I can say that because Faith's not here to defend him. So, what's that, Faith? Oh, you're not here. Sorry. Not sorry. Recess. So, the curious thing will be when we hear more about, like, the overall plot.
There's
a lot of rumors already about the sequel that, you know, it won't focus on Mario and Luigi, which is odd because it says their names in the title.
Super Mario Brothers featuring not the Super Mario Brothers.
Well, we know there have been movies that have done that, so, yeah.
Right.
Captain America Civil War. That was an Avengers movie and totally not better than Batman v Superman. I said it! I can literally break that plot in one sentence. Like, it's I won't do it now because I don't want to lose what fans we have, but it's out there and you know what it is. Anyway, so hopefully that goes well. But in even more curious news, we've gotten an update on Sonic 3, but it's not the update you're expecting. Okay, so if you don't know, CinemaCon, yes, that's a thing. CinemaCon is going on right now, and a whole bunch of movie companies, including who is the one behind Sonic? Oh, Paramount.
Paramount, yeah.
Thank you. I lost it for a second. I lost it! Paramount was showing footage for various projects that they have upcoming, and that included, wait for it, Sonic 3. So, Jeff Fowler was there showing off some of the footage, and we did indeed see a shot of, I think it was Sonic, Knuckles, and Tails fighting Shadow.
Yep.
But did we hear Shadow talk? No.
Nope.
And here's why. This comes right from Jeff Fowler to the press. Ahem. Quote, "We won't be revealing who is playing Shadow in the film because we want you to walk into his mystery." End quote. Aha!
Okay, because one that's a direct line reference to the game of Shadow the Hedgehog.
Yes.
Nice.
And yeah, like, and secondly, it's basically like, it's clear they're actually putting a lot more fan service stuff, especially to the game and game connection and all that. And of course, naturally, like, I've been kind of seeing like the speculation posts on Twitter, and basically it definitely could be like the OG voice actor, like, or I don't know, get Roger Craig Smith to voice Ass Shadow, which
that would be a twist because
he did voice Sonic, now voices Shadow, so that would be a twist. Or of course, like Shadow, we don't know. Again, we want to be Keanu Reeves, but again, guy can dream, or it could be somebody else entirely.
Hayden Christensen. I mean, he's right there.
So yeah, I'm glad we're getting more details. I mean, specs of details as it is, and I believe they even show off like even Jim Carrey's Fat Robotnik. So it's not just Bald Robotnik.
He has the fat suit.
Yes, we'll be seeing Fat Robotnik this time around. But yeah, just seeing what we want to know. Like, were they releasing one more teaser trailer before release? Most likely. But like, yeah, just as the months goes by and this movie comes on approaches release, like, yeah, I wonder who will be the voice. I mean, a voice actor, great. If it keeps the OG voice actor, fine. But I can't help but wonder.
No, there is nothing but wondering going on at this point.
and I think this is a bold move for a very basic reason, because think about what they did with Sonic 2. They let us know that it was Idris Elba, and then we were like, "Ooh, how is he going to sound as Knuckles?" And then we hear, "Who says I needed your power?" You know, like, oh, okay, yeah, this is gonna rock, and it was. And then, of course, Colleen O'Shaughnessy as Tails coming back from the games, you know, that was a big twist. So there's only a few ways they can play this. They're not doing it because they have this big A-lister star doing it, which is totally possible. Be it someone related to the video games, like a Roger Craig Smith or someone else, or the original Shadow the Hedgehog voice actor, whoever that is. Or they have someone just so shockingly perfect that we don't even think about it. Here's another idea for you. I literally just thought of this. Are you ready?
Oh, boy.
Are you sure?
I'm ready.
Okay. Josh Brolin.
I guess. Yeah, it could work. It could work.
Think of like a modified Thanos voice for Shadow. It's like... I want you to try and do
it. I mean, look, I get Josh Brolin. He could definitely pull off like the whole a dark realist kind of voice kind of deal as well. But could it be edgy realist?
Yeah, it's like dread it, run from it. Destiny arrives all the same, or should I say, the ultimate life form? And here I am. You know, something like that. You know, I could see him doing it. He's got range. He's got range. All right, he's got higher pitched voices and lower pitched voices. He can find a unique Shadow voice. Okay, he can do it. So remember, he played Cable and Thanos, and they didn't sound like one another.
So true, true.
Dude's got range. So just saying, like, this is a bold move because they're really gonna harp on it. Like, think about the trailers now. That means we're only gonna see Shadow in like presence and in action, but we're not gonna hear his voice. And maybe they're just trying to build up the hype. In a unique way, I guess. I don't know. Of course, then the movie will come up, and then you'll hear a voice like, "I'm the ultimate life form." Yeah.
They could do that, but thankfully they learned a lesson in the first movie. So here's hoping they do not repeat that same mistake again here.
Like Maria.
Oh no.
Okay.
Now imagine Ben Schwartz voicing Shadow. Crap.
Okay, that was actually my idea. Actually, what if they got Ben Schwartz to do both? Like, think about it.
Pulling a Dragon Ball Super.
Yeah, exactly. Like, he'll do like his regular Sonic voice, which we like, and then he'll just do like a deeper voice to play Shadow, like two sides of a coin. You know? I mean, Possibly. I mean, I know they're not clones of one another. We gotta make that very clear. They're not related.
No, they're not.
They're just hedgehogs. But like, that would be an interesting twist to see, like, Sonic's opposite sounding like Sonic, just deeper. So I don't know. Does Ben Schwartz have that range though? I don't know.
Like, I don't know either.
He usually plays really high pitched, you know, blue colored characters. And then his guy in Community, whatever he sounded like. So you never know. But it's like they clearly have something going on. All right. They have something going on to try and make this happen. We shall see. You know, as long as it doesn't turn out to be like an ugly Sonic kind of thing, we shall be happy. We shall be happy. But at this point, I think they've earned our trust. Fair?
Yes.
They have. They pay tribute to the games. I'll give them that point. Yes. All right.
We'll have to see. Please be Keanu or Hayden. all right. Next up is, without a doubt, the weirdest story of the week, ladies and gentlemen. We have the newest topic for the next Splatoon 3 Splatfest. And in the words of everybody's favorite blue destructive furball, I'm cute. I'm fluffy. Yeah. And I'm quoting here. It's spring. Which fuzzy fluffiness do you like most? End quote. Okay. Do you like baby chicks, as in the birds? Don't get weird on this. Lil, okay, I want to say this. Lil bunnies. Not little. Lil bunnies. And bear cubs. Props on them for using different versions of little and young.
Yeah, like so obviously I think probably the safest bet is obviously with bear cubs, because one, Mr. Grill in Salmon Run, as well as spoilers, he's the final boss of this game. So like I think the safe bet would probably be bear cubs, but again, you never know. Just it could be either be baby chicks. I'm not considering little bunnies because again, fries forever cursed, but you never know if it's possibly she can finally pull an upset. But at the moment right now, I feel that bear cubs is the go-to pick of choice because, again, it's teddy bears. But, eh.
Yeah, this is just one of those things where you're just going to have to smile and roll with it. All right. like, I look at this and I go, okay? Like, I got nothing against these three animals. All right? My sister used to have a rabbit. It was adorable. I've seen baby chicks, and you know, I grew up on certain movies that had bear cubs, and of course the Coca-Cola polar bear commercials.
Now you're making me feel
very
old.
Adorable bear cubs.
Now you're making me feel old.
All right, no, remember I'm older than you, so that makes me ancient. So yeah, but it's like I don't care about the fluffiness. I'm last thought, but he's not on here, so I can't vote for that.
Yeah, like Nintendo, how about we collab with Disney and do a Splatfest like that way? Come on, we missed those collaboration Splatfests.
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm not going to say they're running out of ideas, but, like,
They're really throwing darts at the board. Like, okay, what kind of topic are we going to do? Like, and what kind of topic can actually give Fry a huge advantage and don't have to worry about, like, oh, like, yeah, we're not biased. We're not Shiver or Big Man bias. Like, yeah. The topics themselves is, like, as you said, like, really, like, throwing darts at the board. Like, what is... I know, like, later we're gonna be like, which toilet paper you want, over, above, or no toilet paper at all? Like, just like, I don't know. The topic is definitely getting random. I mean, sure, it's season based. I mean, that's kind of fine and all that, but at the same time, it's like, what are these topics?
Yeah. So, like, okay, Nintendo, I get it. You're trying to be a certain way and blah, 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 but do better next time. Like just you know, do a little more.
Yeah, how about
try
bring
a little harder?
Yeah, and how about bring my money versus love? Yes, please.
I want a team. Revenge. So, and here's the thing though. I look at this one and once again I say I have no idea which is going to win. Because you know, your gut instinct might be little bunnies, but you know, there's a lot of farmers out there that are gamers, and you know, they might be like, oh yeah, I got plenty of chicks on the farm, they're the most adorable things ever. And then this will be like the perfect opening for the bear cubs to come in and go, no, we're gonna rock this place. You know, you never know. And like, again, keyboard won last time.
Yes, and they won the cloud, all three cloud categories, which yeah. So yeah, in the end, you can vote what you think is popular, and I believe guitar was popular, and that didn't matter. That did not matter.
Yeah. So I guess get ready. I guess get ready for this, because it's happening.
Mm-hmm. Yes, so you can see the Splatoon this combo I believe later on tomorrow night, and I'll be interesting to see what the three will be saying in regards. I'm curious. Can't wait to see.
Just so you know, it's happening on the 19th through the 21st, which is ironic because that means I won't be able to play. I might be able to play. I got a con that weekend, and then I'm going to a wrestling event on Sunday. It'll be like really late at night, but I might get a few hours in. I will definitely not be trying to go for a champion
ruler
rank like I always
ruler.
Do.
Okay.
So we shall see. This is going to be so weird. And then it's like, what are they going to do to top this one in June? Or I'm sorry, May. So what's your favorite weather pattern? April showers, May flowers, or June heat, I guess. I don't know. Who knows? Who knows? Nintendo is weird. We all know this. This is canon. It's a canon event. So, speaking of canon events, let's talk about the most easy to understand canon in the history of video games, Xenoblade Chronicles. That was a joke. Come on, this is so not easy to understand, as proven by Future Redeemed. Like, the stuff they throw out in like the first hour of Future Redeemed is like, wait a minute, who are these people? I had to look it up. I literally had to look it up. I was like, wait, who were these people again? So, all right, but as we all know, Xenoblade Chronicles 3 was awesome. Again, number 2 JRPG of all time. I will die on that hill. Okay, if nothing more, it's top 5. I'll be generous. I'll be generous. Everyone's got a different opinion. That's wrong. But the ending, which I will not spoil, was very, not just emotional, but it left fans wondering what's going to happen next. Because there was a lot going on with the universes, with the worlds of Crom and Rex, and the origin system and all that. It's complicated. I will not dive into this lore. we don't have time for that.
No.
But many are wondering, like, when are we going to get certain answers? Because we don't have certain answers. There are certain answers that have not been told in these games or in Future Redeemed. So during a special art book was released for Xenoblade Chronicles 3. It's out in Japan right now. And there was a massive interview with the game's staff, including its director, Tetsuya Takahashi. And in it, he noted that there was a survey done by fans, and they said that one of the biggest questions was about the game's lore and certain elements that weren't revealed by the third game. Ow! Bit my tongue. Editing. Yes, it did bite my tongue. It really hurt. Oh, I'm bleeding. I thought
we need to get a band-aid.
No. He said, quote, "There are answers for basically all the questions and points that people wrote in the survey. Simply, I think it may not be necessary to answer any of those things now. Therefore, if we can continue to make things in the future, I think there may come a time when we are able to provide answers. For example, we are aware that there are many requests to see what happens after the ending. But if we do that, then we have to journey beyond Xenoblade Chronicles 3. So I understand how people feel, but for now, just please wait for a little while. I'd be grateful if fans continue to eagerly await that." End quote. Aha! So, some of those teases were about Origin, the craft that started this whole shenanigan, Ionios, and how we're supposed to think of Xenoblade Chronicles 3 as a virtual world. So we were in the Matrix the whole time.
Yes.
So that was something. And Xenoblade Chronicles 3 was a huge success for the Switch. It's the best-selling game of the series so far. So Xenoblade Chronicles 4 should be coming, or will be coming, eventually. So maybe we will get the answers we so desire. It just won't be for a little bit.
Fine. Like, if they're going to tell us the story, like, eventually review the details, then by all means, like, in due time. I just hope it's in our lifetime, please.
Yeah. So, well, remember, let's see. So Xenoblade 2 came out in 2017. Xenoblade 3 came out in 2022, so that was about 5 years, a little less than 5 years, so that would make it 2027, maybe 26, 27. Let's just be generous.
Yeah.
But hey, remember, given the scale of those games, and like all that they did, like give them the time. Remember, don't rush it out. Release it when it's ready. Right?
Yes, please.
Right? Microsoft? Ubisoft? EA? give me another one. Bethesda? I mean, Bethesda's under Microsoft.
Yeah. That's the problem. If you say like half of them, they're going to be under Microsoft or someone else.
Bungie. There you go. Bungie's under Sony. Bungie. Yeah, and yeah, so I can't say enough how much I love Xenoblade Chronicles 3. Another game that took me by complete surprise with how much I loved it. And, you know, they said they're going to answer it in XC4. I said ZX. that's another thing entirely. XC4, I'll wait. I will wait. It's just, I feel bad for them because they're going to have to top one of the most emotional stories I have ever witnessed in any medium. So, good luck with that. All right, speaking of trying to live up to incredible expectations, let's talk about Moon Studios. Mm. Of course, the team behind Ori and the Blind Forest, Ori and the Will of the Wisps, and their upcoming game, No Rest for the Wicked. No, I don't have a date for that's release, by the way. So the question is, given the success and beauty of the first two Ori titles, will we get Ori 3?
Mm.
Well... In a chat with Game Informer, the CEO and creative director, Thomas Mahler. Mahler. I like that. Mahler. What happened on your date? I mauled her. Oh, that sounds dirty. I'm sorry. That was wrong. I might edit that out. but yeah, CEO and creative director, Thomas Mahler, said that if a third title was to happen, and he admitted it could happen, it won't happen. Okay, so let me repeat that. It could happen. It might happen, but it won't happen right now. There we go. Because they're focusing on No Rest for the Wicked. However, he said, quote, I have a title for it already. I have some ideas, but so far, right now, we are completely focused on No Rest for the Wicked for the time being. End quote. Then
that's fair.
That's very fair. Totally fair. Like, they can't do... No developer should be consigned to one game forever. Like, that's just the truth. I mean, even Game Freak, with what everything they've done with Pokemon, they've dived into other titles in the meantime. All right? Remember Little Town Hero?
Yes.
It wasn't the best game, but it was a clever game. It was clever. I never beat because I got trapped in a boss fight that I couldn't get out of. Like, literally, like, I would have to start all over again.
Oh, that's annoying.
It was so terrible. So I just looked up the ending on YouTube, and I was mostly satisfied. But, cheating? I think not. But then co-founder of Moon Studios, I apologize if I'm saying this wrong, Gennady Kurol said, I think we're all pretty happy with where it left off. I think we were able to complete the story of Ori. It's a complete arc now. If you play both games, it's a complete story. So it felt like the only way we would come back to Ori 3 is if we had more to say, more story to tell. End quote. Also very fair.
Yep.
Yeah. Because, like, let's be honest here. Sometimes you need to know when to end the story. Halo! Gears of War! Let's think of a non-Mario or non-Microsoft title.
I was gonna say Call of Duty, but
no.
That's another Microsoft title at this
point.
Well,
not just that, but that would imply that the story was the important thing for them. Modern Warfare 3. I mean, there's others out there, obviously, but like there are times when you extend something far too long because you want to make money off of it. But sometimes you need to know when it's like, hey. We told our story. It's over. Let's move on. Let's do another game. And then, hey, if you do think of another one, then come back. That's what happened with God of War.
Yep.
You could argue that the Greek pantheon went on way too long with all those spinoffs that really didn't matter.
And then
they took like what was like a decade long break or so, and then they came back with God of War PS4, and it was just like, this is like the most epic thing ever.
Yes.
Yeah. So. I'm saying, like, if they think they're done with Ori's story, okay. The only story left to finish with that is the emphatic death battle between it and Hollow Knight. One of the most requested death battles ever. And it's not happening currently because of, you know, what's going on with Rooster Teeth. So screw you, Warner Brothers Discovery. So, yeah. But again, sometimes you need to know when to walk away. It's just the truth. It's hard to hear in the gaming industry because it's like, you know, we could bank off this for a few more titles, or you could stop and make something new, which is what they're doing with No Rest for the Wicked. So we'll just see. So if you are an Ori fan, there is hope. They do have a third idea. It's just not the most important thing in their minds. Okay? All right. Next up, let's see. Okay, here. Speaking of not living up to expectations, Pokemon Horizons. Yeah, I have to talk about this again.
It exists.
It exists. Have either of you gotten a chance to watch it?
No.
Okay. No.
Okay, I won't keep harping on my opinion. I'll just refer to my review where I gave it a 2.5 out of 5.
I mean, you might as well just spoil it. I don't mind.
No, I already spoiled much of it, remember? Like, the whole I don't know and Liko is, yep, like, a really bad
Okay. That follow. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, just, like, in general, my overall general opinion of it. But yeah, like, I did not like these first batch of episodes. It did not set up the series for greatness. I hear that there are episodes upcoming that are incredible, including one featuring Freed and the Captain, which, again, it's sad that Captain Pikachu is the best character on the show. I mean, even beyond epic Pikachu-ness, like, Captain is the best character. Like, it's
Pikachu holding this entire series right now on the back, on his back.
Yeah. Pikachu, use strength. We need you to carry this entire show. the only good piece of news that I have to give off of this is that the official Pokemon Twitter handle revealed that. The official Pokemon Twitter handle revealed that the next set of episodes are going to arrive on Netflix on May 10th. Why is that significant? Because that's a full month ahead of schedule. Like, remember,
that was
when,
fast.
I know, right? Like, when they were doing Pokemon Journeys, they did like 3-month increments. You could time it and say, like, okay, within 3 months we'll get the next batch of episodes. And that's what they did for Pokemon Journeys, Master Journeys, and Ultimate Journeys, which is just terrible titles outside of the original. And then you can see that with the theme songs too. Those were not the best. And so this is good that they're shortening it. Now, this could just be because, remember, the first batch was supposed to show up in February, and said they moved it to March, so it could have been just that they cut down a little bit of the time, or it could be they're trying to do a 2-month period from now on. I don't know. But apparently, they are coming sooner, and one of the episodes will feature Liko with amnesia. How did she get amnesia? I don't know!
Gonna hear the I don't know a lot more, I'm guessing, from that.
I'm going to do the drinking game. I am going to do the drinking game in batch 2. One shot of whatever you want for every time Liko or someone in general says, I don't know. It'll be a lot. Like, I'm begging you, viewers, if you have not watched Pokemon Horizons batch 1, do a drinking game or a tally of all the times for episode 1 to episode 12. Yeah, I think it's 12. Of Liko saying, I don't know, and you're going to get at least 24. At least.
Jeez.
That's right. That's 2 per episode. And that's why I say it's her catchphrase. And I saw some of them, she said, like, at least 3 or 4 times in an episode. So it probably will be way over 24. Who knows? Who knows? I don't know. It's contagious. So, but if you are excited for Pokemon Horizons, batch 2, God have mercy on your soul. No, I won't be that mean, but it is coming out on May 10th, so you got less than a month, so that's actually pretty cool, and actually May is a pretty open month for me, so I will be able to enjoy it in probably real time and then review it, so I don't have to worry about how much I'm not going to potentially like it. How much am I potentially not going to like it, Scott?
I don't know.
Exactly! And that's why you're my runner-up co-host. Sorry, Will. All right. Okay. This is next one is easily one of the most hilarious stories of the roster. So Ed Boon, man, legend, game designer, great visionary. He has been asked, of course, all kinds of questions over the ages with his game, and one question has dominated his what's called his facts, I guess. And it's the question of, will Ed Boon ever be a playable character in Mortal Kombat? And the answer is no. I'm trying to find the interview. I thought I had it up and I lost it, but Ed Boon has specifically stated that he will not be a playable character in Mortal Kombat, and I am I love that. I'm sorry. Oh, here it is. I knew I had it up. Here we go. Yeah, here we go. You wouldn't believe how many times it's been suggested that we make Ed Boon as an MK fighter. Not gonna happen.
Okay, someone somewhere is gonna go turn on their Mortal Kombat Armageddon and make themselves an Ed Boon to fight with.
I mean, like, I'm just kind of like, granted, like, we kind of have that dream of like having the creator be part of their games. I mean, like, I think the only time I think that actually has happened was going to Tekken 8 with going to Harada as a ghost character avatar, if I recall correctly. But yeah, I think that was the only time where, like the creators themselves were actually in their own game. And I don't know, would have been nice to see Ed Boon as an official character or some sort. But again, we have new Psybots, so that's kind of like the other option, quote unquote.
That's true. He technically is in the game in a multiversal way. I mean, think about it. So, I don't know. That's just hilarious to me. Is like that this is one of his most requested things. Like, are they gonna put you in the game? No, I will make sure that they do not.
I mean, imagine that kind of scenario. Like, if like in some utopia, they allow like creators to be put in their own games. Like, I don't know, Sakurai in Smash Brothers. You actually would see literal Daddy Sakurai in Smash Brothers. How will you think the Nintendo characters would react to that? I mean, that's a fan fiction idea right there, but I could probably see it happen in a game somewhere or another. I don't know. That's like one scenario.
It's just like, if we're being honest here, there are, no offense to him, but like better suited characters to show up in MK. I mean, just look at the current fighter pack where you had like Peacemaker, Homelander, and Omni-Man. So, you know, like we could do a whole main event talk. We won't do it tonight, but like we could do a full main event topic about, you know, realistic third-party characters that could show up in MK that would totally work. I don't know, like Lara Croft. I could totally see her being in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, just like her with her pistols, like a grappling hook, her bow and arrow, you know.
And she has encountered a lot of death, if you remember her remake. Yes.
Yeah. Lots of penetration of spikes.
I'm glad you said up spikes. I'm just saying. If you had stopped the two things before, it could have gotten M-rated. But yeah, like, and don't forget her mystical artifacts that she's found. Like, she could probably bust some of those out to help her out. But like the Lara Croft could totally fit. John Wick was one they wanted. They wanted to get John Wick, but they couldn't. And like, heck yeah, like his durability, of course, is legendary. So if you're gonna bring in anybody, you gotta bring in John Wick.
Yeah, like I don't know. Also, like I know they did for MKX, but like, why not bring back Spawn in MK1 again? Yep.
Spawn, Kratos. There's potential. There's so much potential before we ever need to get Ed Boon. Like you said, Will, we got Noob Saibot. So why reinvent the wheel when you technically already have something going? For you? So, yeah. And they just announced that Ermac is coming out April 15th, I think it was, to Early Access.
Yes.
And I just learned the story of Ermac about how he was an error code that was like abbreviated for like ease, and then fans found the code and they're like, is Ermac a character? And so it took them a few games, but they finally made Ermac and he got like a cult following. So now, like, yeah, you know, they're bringing him back. And I saw his trailer and dear gosh, the fatality he had. Like, they're like, I'm not saying they're getting, no, they are, they're getting sadistic. Like, they're like, how gruesome can we make this? And like, they keep finding ways to top it. And I'm just like, wow, these are choices, ladies and gentlemen. These are choices. No. I'm fine with Ed Boon like knowing his limits, and saying, you know, we're good with what we have, so let's just hold off. So I'm fine with that. And finally, there are a series of Tears of the Kingdom graphic tees coming to you from Uniqlo. That's how you say it, right? Uniqlo.
I always call it Uniqlo.
Unique glow. It's a unique glow for Nintendo. Oh, whoa,
whoa. Okay, I'll give you that one.
Thank you. But there's actually even a contest where you can win some of the shirts for free. But they have, let's see, 6 shirts. And I'll admit, they're not bad designs, but they're not exactly the best. Like, one of them is literally just the Tears of the Kingdom cover art in square form, just plastered on the back.
Yeah, like someone just ironed it on a black shirt.
And yes, they have some text on it. They have text on the front and the back. It's just the title's name. And I can't even read what the front one says. Oh, it's the Zonai text. That's it. So, like, oh, no, sorry, I apologize. It says, please lend him your power. And it has the shot of Link trying to reach Zelda from the beginning of the game. I mean, that's clever, but that's not like, first of all, you're not going to see that really well from the front, especially with the shading, how they have it. Then the second is just an iron. Like, let's be better here. The second one, the other ones are okay. They're a lot smaller. Like, one's the sign dude. Like, the sign is poking out of the square pocket. And then you got one with the Koroks. That obviously needs to
burn. No, that should burn.
I would take the sign guy over the Koroks any day.
A better one is the shirt that has all the champions together.
Yes, that one is the best one out of the bunch.
That's easily the best of the bunch. But still, like, when that's like the best one, like, you can do better. I know you can do better. So, and this one doesn't have one on the back. And then there's the, what is this one? Oh, it's the, it's the Goblins.
Yeah, the McGoblin King or something like that. Yeah.
Is a choice. Like, hey, kids, who wants to wear a McGoblin shirt? I do.
Yes, and even has the Blood Moon as well with the red shirt, the Blood Moon.
Actually, it's more of an orange.
Really? You think?
Yeah, I'd say it's orange. Yeah, I would. Of course, I'm the host, so I'm naturally right.
But it would be worth saying with the Blood Moon, why you make an orange moon instead of a Blood Moon? It kind of, I mean, yes, it looks orange and out of here. I'm looking at the image right now, but yeah. I think it's referencing the Blood Moon.
I know it's referencing that, but it's clearly orange, or like the lightest red possible, like red orange. There you go. It's red orange. Clearly.
Fine, a compromise. Fine.
Compromise. See, I'm magnanimous. You're welcome. But like, this is something that, as a guy who at one point in time, like, religiously bought the best comic book shirts he could find, some of these, like, are the ones that kind of tick me off, because I got one that was literally just like a perfect rectangle, and it was an image of Batman. It was a cool image, but it was really small, and it was just a rectangle on the shirt, and I'm just like, why is it so small? Like, why is it that perfect rectangle? And then other ones were like full body shirts, you know, like where you could, like, the image went everywhere. Like, there was one I had called a Gothic Gotham, and it just had this really intricate design all over the shirt front and back. And I'm just like, that's the kind of shirts I want to wear in public. That's the one I want to see. Like, man, that's a cool shirt. Like, you dang right it is. And I look at this and I go, look, I got a shirt guy I work with named Alex. We love coming up with great designs for wrestlers and beyond. And we've made a few shirts for myself. And we know how to make it look and really pop with the shirt and all that. So, like, we could do better. So hire us, Nintendo. we will make you an army of shirts. We will touch all the franchises. All right. We will make them shine, because that's what it should be like, to give these fans the best shirts possible. So. Yes, I'm getting very passionate about shirts. I have tastes, you know, and I have a taste for good shirts to wear. All right? All right? I don't want basic. Okay, you're basic. I want that. Okay? I'm much better than basic. Okay, love? Okay, good. Yeah. All right. I don't know what accent that was, but it fit. You're basic. So, moving on to a not basic main event. I was doing a list for another site, and one of the games I put on it I felt was really underappreciated within the franchise that it's in. Like, it's a good game, and I feel that this game should be appreciated much, much more than it has been. And then I thought, like, there's got to be other games that have been this way. They've been like, you know, the team's put in the effort, they made a great title, then because of either, you know, publishers not pushing it enough, gamers not realizing what was out there, or something in between, it didn't sell well, they went in another direction, or something else to just mean, like, what happened to this? Like, think about Paper Mario 1000 Year Door. Everyone loves that title. And then after that, they just completely went off the rails. Like, no, go back to this. This was the greatest one.
Yes.
So, yeah.
And again, counting down today, it's 1000 Year Door Return. When was that? The 23rd? Wasn't it? something like that. Doesn't matter. We'll get there eventually. But tonight, we are going to look at Nintendo's vast history. And we're going to look at games that we felt are really underappreciated by the fan base. Naturally, we're going to do it in a Nintendo discussion. All right, so here's the only two rules. Number one, it has to be a Nintendo game. It could be on console. It could be on handheld. Don't matter. Just has to be a Nintendo title. Number two, can't be on the Switch. Because let's face it, I mean, while there are absolutely some underappreciated games on the Switch, Sparks of Hope. Screw you, Ubisoft. Oh, Skull and Bones will do well. Yeah, right. Pretty sure Sparks of Hope outsold Skull and Bones. It's not even close. So, and they didn't need to have a demo that was tagged by minutes. So, yeah, you know what you did. But yeah, no Switch games. I mean, those will be appreciated or underappreciated in given time. So anything from the Wii U backwards is available.
Okay, so that eliminates my original game then. Okay.
Seriously, Will? You couldn't think farther back from the Switch?
I mean, if you want to go with my go-to game, which I have been referencing on many podcasts in due time, then fine. But okay, I got to do some research now.
I give him a simple title, and he goes for like the easiest answer, Scott. This is, again, why you're my runner-up host. Okay. So I will go first, apparently, to give Will some time to think about a non-Switch game that's underappreciated. I even told him one earlier, and he's like, no, I got another game. It's like, yeah, now I'm looking even more like a genius, aren't I? So my game is one that I have talked about many times on this podcast. One that I love with all of my heart, and who I feel has one of the greatest main characters in all of gaming history. I am, of course, talking about Sengen Kagura. And no, I could feel Will's eyes go wide, going, Nani? No. I, of course, talking about Fire Emblem Path of Radiance. Yes, this game means the world to me. I've told the story many times before, but I found out about this game, not the franchise, the game, while I was at my local Meijer, which is a local grocery store chain. And that was during the days of GameCube when they had demo machines in the electronics department. They don't have those anymore. They just don't. It's a relic of a bygone age, just like me. And that was a joke. Laugh, Scott. Thank you. So... And I saw the trailer for it, and it featured Grail going up against the Black Knight and Ike begging for his father not to die and, like, some of the gameplay. And I'm just like, this game looks so cool. And it finally came out, and I bought it, and it was, like, my first Fire Emblem game ever. And everything just hit for me. And, again, I had never played this franchise before. I knew of the franchise. A friend of mine had the original, I gotta say this correctly, the original American version of the Game Boy Advance title, which is Fire Emblem 7. Which is the one with the Elwood Lynn and Hector, a Blazing Sword. So many names. It's Fire Emblem. It's Fire Emblem 7. It's Fire Emblem Blazing Sword. But it was that game. But I heard about it. And I never played it. And then I got Path of Radiance. And like this game just has such a great story and characters to it. The gameplay is so tight. It's hard, but it's not brutal unless you want to go to that setting. And you can play it over and over again and get different storylines and in certain ways, storylines and character interactions because of who you have in your team. And that carried over with me when I eventually completed the Tellia Saga with Radiant Dawn, which I feel wasn't as good as Path of Radiance, mainly because they have this character named Micaiah. Micaiah hates strong. But still, it was a great game. And then playing them together was a unique, two-part story, which they honestly don't do in Fire Emblem anymore. They make sure that they don't have pure sequels. They have, follow-ups and, like, the next game in the line. Three Houses is technically the closest. I guess Fates, I suppose.
Yeah,
I'll put Fates in there, I suppose, but that's technically different. But what I loved about this game so much is that it was so easy to get engrossed in the world because of how they told the story through the characters, through the perspective of Ike and Princess Alencia and the Lagoos and everything. And Ike was just such a great main character that you were rooting for him every single time. And like the only mistakes he ever made were like small tactical ones, and technically they weren't even his fault. So it wasn't even like a true hero's journey, if you will, because he knew who he was and what he wanted to be. And then he's actually forced to do more things, like become the general in an army. He never wanted that. And he resigned at the moment he could, then hated it when he got forced back into the title again, which makes me love him even more. He's the bro. All right. Like, there are lords and there are bros, and Ike's the bro. All right. I would love to have Ike as my bro. But you enjoyed his story. His relationships with all the characters were great. I will forever remember him chastising the Empress of Benyon, Sanaki, because she was being a total brat. And I could use another word here, but I will not. She was being a total brat. And Ike just straight up calls her out because he doesn't give a crap about her title. And they're ordering, and the subjects are ordering the guards to kill him. And I'm like, good luck with that. You're going to try and kill Ike? Good luck with that. But he doesn't care about title. He doesn't care about rank. He doesn't believe anyone's superior to anyone, which is a life philosophy I honestly have. No, I did not take that philosophy from Ike, but he did help enforce it because I'm like, he's like the boss character and he believes this way. So who am I not to believe this way myself? But everything was great. I mean, Alencia, I adore Alencia. She's like one of the best royalty characters ever. You know, pure of heart, steel in her veins when she needs it. You know, always wanting to do the right thing. Never afraid, like there in the Radiant Dawn. I know I'm going off track here, but in Radiant Dawn, there's a scene where she breaks down crying because she feels the weight of everything crashing around her. And it's not her fault, it's honestly not her fault. But she's like, I didn't ask for this, I shouldn't have been queen, and I need to try and keep this together, but it's failing. And it's like, you never see that a lot in fantasy titles. You always seem like, you know, I will persevere, I will keep going, and everything.
Yeah,
like, she cries. And it's just, it's beautiful. And like, Alencia was that way in the first game too. Ike Alencia forever. Like, screw you, Joffrey. Wait, Joffrey or Joff Keighley? Either or. Screw you.
Very similar.
Very, very similar. But the reason I feel this is underappreciated is because this was in the time period where Fire Emblem existed, but it wasn't the most relevant of games. Like, when these games were announced, Path of Radiance and Radiant Dawn, they weren't at the E3s. They weren't at the big events. They were, that franchise had been at that time, especially specifically like Japan only. Again, they only brought it over with Fire Emblem Blazing Sword. And then they did Sacred Stones, which is another great game. And then they did Path of Radiance to Radiant Dawn. And then after that was Awakening, which was supposed to be the final breath. Ah ha ha. And then it got its true awakening. Ah ha ha. And I mean, we all know what happened from there. But because of that, everyone thinks of Fire Emblem as it is now, which, if we're being honest, is a waifu simulator. Like, even with Three Houses, with the incredibly deep and dark stories, yes, Edelgard was evil.
Edelgard did nothing wrong.
Yes, still turned into waifu wars.
Yeah, but it's just like, you know, and they had the deep stories, they still, and they had the type gameplay, and they did, even with great gameplay additions like the Mila's Turn Wheel or the variations of that, which they did not have in Path of Radiance or Radiant Dawn, which arguably made it tougher because obviously you had to think strategically. There was no, oopsie, I lost a character.
There's no go time. Back three turns.
No, you got to replay the entire stage.
No. Now, Radiant Dawn did have a quick save feature, which was a godsend during the Elise's Gambit episode. Like, that one was a full-on siege, and I quick save. I saved Scrum like it was Baldur's Gate 3, just like 15 years ahead of time. But, wait, hold on, 15 years? That doesn't matter. But, no, Path of Radiance doesn't get the respect it deserves because it came before the true awakening of the franchise when everyone was playing it. If you go back, that's why I would love a Path of Radiance remaster remake, so that, you know, the only thing I would add to it is the, like, the Mila's Turn Wheel feature. Upgrade the graphics, full voice acting, of course. We need to have a great voice actor for Ike. Bring in the Smash Brothers guy or whoever you want, but this would be a great game to say, like, hey, or time to say, this game was great. You didn't really get to play it before, but it was great. So go experience this and see what Fire Emblem is like when it's not about the waifus. I'm just saying, you know, you don't need to engage with them. I regret nothing. I regret nothing. All right, since Will's possibly still thinking, Scott, what is your title? I'm not saying that the world ends with you because of it.
Man, here I was going to try to make it a little more vague until the big reveal, but
too bad.
I'm so mad, but yeah. So yes, the game that I mean, I obviously would have. I don't know if I would have chosen, but I also think I might have chosen anyways. Of underappreciated titles is The World's End With You, which is a Nintendo DS game. Mm-hmm. It did get eventually ported to the Switch, but the DS version is still, I think, the best version of it.
It got ported everywhere. It got ported to iOS and Android. It's weird, but yeah.
That's true. It got ported on the mobile phones for some reason, but I still think the DS played it the best.
Oh, yeah, totally. I totally agree with that.
I do think it's interesting just going back, though, and looking at how the development went. So Nintendo was very impressed by the Square Enix team that made the Kingdom Hearts Chain of Memories game because they liked the way that it looked and how it played on the Game Boy Advance. And they thought, what if this team can do something on our new system, the Nintendo DS? And so they asked the people of the team, they asked the main like directors of the team to come down and try out the DS and see if they wanted to make a game on it. And they said, yes, we do. And that game eventually turned out to be The World Ends With You, which utilized the touchscreen extremely well. It utilized a lot of the mechanics and a lot of the visuals extremely well. And even like when the game was released, critics and basically anyone who played the game thought it was amazing. The problem was very few people, well, not very few, but a lot less people than should have played this game, played this game. And because of that, Square Enix kind of just like dropped it. They did do like a manga, but that was during the time of they're doing a manga for literally like everything they had like mm-hmm. any rights for. That's like when they got the Kingdom Hearts manga started. That's when they got a lot of all these things going on. Mm-hmm. And the World Ends With You was one of those things that they started a manga, they didn't really go anywhere with it, and then they kind of just dropped it into the abyss until Neo came out. And even when Neo came out, they just dropped that in the abyss without even marketing it. Just kind of like showed up one day. It's like, what the heck's this? It's a sequel to the other game. Yeah, since when?
Yeah, and then it didn't sell as well, and they were disappointed. It didn't meet expectations. Yeah, I wonder why.
Nobody knew this game existed. Why would you think they'd buy it if they didn't know it existed?
Well, I mean, I knew, and I'm people.
Those of us who were following The World Ends With You did see this game and was very excited that it was happening. And yes, I do have two copies of this game. But beside the fact,
suddenly, so do I because of the glitch.
Yeah. So the game itself is really cool in the sense where it takes place kind of in like a world of Limbo called like the Underground or like the Underground?
Yeah, Underground, the UG.
Yeah, the UG. And your whole thing is you play a game with what's known as the Reapers. They call it the Reapers game. And your goal is basically to be the one survivor of this entire thing where you go up against a bunch of all these other people in Limbo. And
but
the winner... The winner gets a chance at life.
That's right. Everyone's dead. I see dead people.
Everyone's dead. And everywhere. Deku is a fun character because he's one of the ones characters who doesn't know he's dead or why he's dead.
Yep.
He just shows up in Shibuya. He's like, hey, they're like, his phone no longer works. Things are not working as well as they're supposed to. He realizes there's a bunch of these events going on. He's like, what's going on? And someone's like, oh, you're dead. He's like, I'm what now?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so the entire game is basically Deku trying to continuously go through these Reapers games to figure out, first off, how is he dead? Why is he dead? What happened to his memories? Why can't he remember anything? And it turns into a lot of just... There's actually a lot of, like, weird plot twists that happen in this game that are actually, like, really cool and really interesting.
I loved it. I really did.
And there's so many things that just, like, just happen. But at the same time, it, like, a lot of people argue, well, this is just like Kingdom Hearts kind of a thing. It's like, yes, but it's the best part of Kingdom Hearts.
I would argue that this one actually makes sense. Like, even with the craziness that Neo throws at us, especially with the couple endings that we have.
Yeah.
Like, this one actually makes sense. You can follow it, you know?
Only two games, so.
There's no, like, multiverses. There's dimensions, there are, but they explain that rather well. So,
Yeah. So it's really cool. The gameplay consists a lot of the DS touchscreen. Combat is talking about like a stamp system that's really interesting. That it also tells you how to basically customize the way you play. And you also have to customize the way you play based on whatever partner you have for the certain period of the game you're at. Because there's times where you change partners in the game. And it's just, it's really interesting and it's dynamic. And it constantly makes you think of what's going on in this game. That eventually when you get to the end, everything does get basically closed up, except for a few things that they kind of want to leave vague for like the possibility of a future game, which we did get Neo for, which does help us with that.
I love Neo. Neo was my game of the year for that.
Neo was great, and nobody else played it. It was just like, oh.
we can love and appreciate it together, Scott. We know that there was at least one other.
Yes. So. And it's just very sad because one of the reasons people were like saying how Neo didn't get any big receptions because it was only on console, and then they released a PC version of it and never told anybody, and it just showed up on Steam one day.
That sounds about right.
And they're like, this would have been better if you actually marketed it. I mean, if they marketed it the first time, it might have been better too.
Yeah. This game, I found out about this game because of, wait for it, the original X-Play.
Mm-hmm.
They loved this game. They gave it a 5 out of 5, and I'm like,
yeah.
Wait a minute, they liked it that much? I'm like, maybe I should try. And I did that a lot back then, because again, G4, rest in peace, times two. they were my outlet to say, like, hey, you should try this game. That's how I got into Ace Attorney. That's how I got into World Ends With You and other ones. And I'm just like, this is awesome. Like, and I loved it. The two-screen dynamic was something I had never done before, and I'm surprised Nintendo didn't try itself with certain other games at the time, or the 3DS even. And the characters, the story, and Neku was so hilarious.
Neku was great.
He is the embodiment of anime teen angst.
Yes.
And here's three things I'll never, I am forever indebted to this game for. One, the game was just great. Second, there was the One More Day. No, not Spider-Man One More Day. But the next day or the day after, whatever it was called, One More Day. And there was the beginning of the game was Neku. It started out the exact same way. It was like, you know, the street, he's lying up, and he's like, same street, same yada yada. And then he goes, "Look, dear Lord, thank you for this day." And he's like, "What is this?" And then he has a bad thought, and he goes, "Must resist emo urges." It was so hilarious. And I was so in love with this game that when I made Tokyo Blade Detective my comic book, I had multiple references to The World Ends With You, including making a character named Hisashi, who I modeled in looks after Neku, complete with the headphones.
Yes.
Because I'm just like, okay, here's the dude. He's not gonna be as cool. He's not as cool as Neku. He's complete opposite personality wise. But I made him look at it, and then my main character of Miko has Neku's personality in many, many ways. She is not a people person. She wishes people would just go away and leave her alone. And it's just like, I remembered Neku and just how angsty he was. I'm like, that was the perfect character for Tokyo. And I got to have Miko embody that. And she is. And it's just like, this is my thank you for the great two games that I played. Did you hear that, Square Enix? I played these games. I even bought the Switch remaster with the extended story because I loved the game that much.
Yes.
And if there is seriously no other games coming out this year for the Switch after Thousand Year Door and I'm done with Baldur's Gate, I might do a back-to-back of World Ends With You.
Yeah.
That's how much I love those games. I would do it. So, excellent, excellent pick, Scott. Especially noting the DS version, because that was...
It is the best version.
Gameplay-wise, absolutely the best version. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. All right, Will, we've given you plenty of time. What do you got?
So, yeah, now I'm just, like, rummaging through the previous on the Wii U backlog before then. And, yeah, like, one, I can always go to the old good old dead horse, which is Skies of Arcadia, but I've been that dead horse way too many times. And I was kind of, like, considering, okay, let's go to the GameCube era then. And, like, I was kind of picking up between these two games and, at first, I kind of want to go with Mario Strikers Charge, but I was wondering, like, was that thing received well or was it did not? I can't really remember. All I know is, like, I just really love Mario Strikers Charge just because, one, it was that underground scene, and, like, I'm not sure what was the end sales of that game, but, or maybe just because it was at the end, like, more or less late in the system's life cycle. But yeah, I would have argued for Super Mario Strikers Charge because I personally feel like that not many people play that game. But there is one title that I also mentioned before, many podcasts before, and I will also defend it as well. That is Star Fox Assault. Yes. Oh, yes.
Interesting choice. I would not have called that from you.
So, you may have heard me mention this game many times over, and the reason I kind of picked this choice, like you, regarding to Fire Emblem, I feel like this is also in that same age when, like, like not many people probably heard of it. I mean, yes, it does have the Star Fox moniker, but again, I believe it's also during the same time period when the original Dazzling Your Door was released as well. It's like roughly in the same month period, if I recall correctly. And yeah, obviously many people like wondering like what was like the next Star Fox game after 64, and like of course we didn't had anything until, and then once the GameCube system was revealed, like, oh, Star Fox. But what was this Star Fox? Like, Star Fox Assault? Like, what is this? And I personally I personally enjoy Star Fox Assault just because, one, even though, like, we came off from a Star Fox Adventure, which is, like, the Zelda Star Fox, which, I don't know, love it or hate it, I get made from Rare, but love it or hate it is, like, a strange entry in the Star Fox library, and then afterwards it became Star Fox Assault. It's like, how the heck you come from a Zelda created from Rare into this? Like, it is that sudden change in genre, like go from a Zelda like adventure to back to the age old formula. And like, even though Star Fox Assault wasn't as like, I don't know, I guess probably just nostalgia is playing a part here that isn't that same shooter base, because like one, it did have the shooting type, but also involved the Landmaster, actually on foot combat, if you recall, as well as that tacked on multiplayer mode with the rest of the gang. It's, I don't know, I just really feel like it should have been given a much more better chance. Like Star Fox Assault definitely had like that interesting story regarding to Aperoids. It did take some liberties of the canon with Andrew Oikony, regarding to the relative of Andross, which a nice little tidbit, like if you are interested in the Star Fox lore. And I don't know, personally for me, I feel like it played very well in regards, like on foot, on land, tank, whatever, like the three major modes of combat. Like, that's what they kind of did with in the original Star Fox multiplayer. But, yeah, just, like, thinking about it now, I feel like, cheesy story aside, even with, like, that whole shipping regard to Crystal and Fox McCloud, I just feel like that whole game itself was, I believe, overlooked because it was, again, during the time of Dazzling Your Door. Like, I feel like, yes, like, I don't know. I'm sounding like a broken record here. But honestly, I feel like if people Magic played this kind of Star Fox Assault, like, I feel it probably would have been a better direction that to what we would have been given to than what we got later on with Star Fox Zero, like, as a full-fledged remake of the original game of 64. And, yeah, I feel like they had some very good ideas with Assault. Like, they had what was going on with going to, like, on foot, on Landmaster, on air. A good combination going to that. And especially, like, that whole big star battle siege regarding to the gate. Like, fighting, like, you see, almost like very Star Wars-esque kind of battle. Like, they had something that was a very good idea and probably one of my most favorite levels to be out there. Like, just a full-on Star Wars battle. But, like, ever since then, I just feel like since they haven't revisited that idea, like, always a Star Wars, like, oh, ship versus ships, like, one fleet versus another, going to a giant army, is, like, yeah, incorporate that Star Wars element into a Star Fox game, and you would have gotten something nice. But it just feels... But unfortunately, they never decided to revisit that idea, which I feel is a darn shame. So, yeah, like, Star Fox Assault is, like, the interpretation of Fox, including with the cast and all that, Pepe O'Hare, as well as Rob 64. Like, I feel, I would argue that was probably the best interpretation of Star Fox, of that lore. Like, that, if not the best entry, aside from, like, the Commando games on the 3DS.
Interesting.
But, yeah, like, if people play more of Assault or, like, heck, yeah, even by extension, a Commando probably would have gotten something more better. But I, in the end, like now with Star Fox Zero, more or less, I feel like that is kind of like the temporary nail in the coffin for Star Fox until I don't know, new blood decides to touch on Star Fox once again. It just feels kind of sad. And I argue Star Fox Assault is that that black horse game in the series that I feel should have deserved much more love than that it got. So
I remember playing Assault back in the day because I played all the Star Fox titles, and I liked the game. I just thought it was too short.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Like, even that was the even with problem, the it was too short.
Like even with the survival mode, like just for extra playability, it then had that same problem with the original game. It was like just go a quick run as an arcade game, which you could easy play it as one simple even quick session if you were very good at it, which like we just wanted more, but they couldn't find a way to extend it, which it's kind of sad.
As we've known in past podcasts, Star Fox should absolutely come back, and they have the easiest out to make something special. You have a story mode, which is deep, has the classic, you know, going through the planets, there's different paths you can take, you have fun battles, etc., etc. Then you have the multiplayer mode, which is Team Star Fox versus Team Star Wolf. Like, you get say like up to 8 players per side. You get to pick your favorite Star Fox or Star Wolf character. As long as you're fast enough, you gotta be quick on the draw. But and then you just have at it in like epic multiplayer battles to see who wins, like elimination, team deathmatch, whatever you want. It's there.
I would also argue as well, like they could have done a Star Wars Battlefront and actually incorporate that in a Star Fox game. I feel like.
Really?
They have all these heroes, all these iconic iconic characters in the Star Fox universe. Why not include that and like put them as like playable characters of some sort, like as a hero based kind of gameplay? Yeah.
As we said in two podcasts back. There we go. Give them a chance, Nintendo. And I know, as we said like longer time ago, you know, like Will was mentioning, get some new blood in here. That's what they did for Wonder, and it worked.
Yes.
That's what they did for certain, like, clearly did that for Fire Emblem in certain ways, and that worked. You know, if you think you have a franchise that's dying, or look at Donkey Kong with Retro. Remember that? Like, they made two incredible Donkey Kong titles. Should have been three. they should have. I don't know why they didn't do three. Tropical Freeze was a hit, especially on the Wii, or Switch. But, you know, they did a good job. So, like, find a new team, or a Mercury's team with Metroid. You know, find a new team who have a vision of what this can be and then get to it. Like, Star Fox needs to be reborn so that this won't be its final assault. You're welcome. And with that awesome pun from your magnanimous host, we are ending this episode of the Nintendo RTM podcast. What do you feel are some of the most underappreciated Nintendo games of all time? Again, handheld or console, all are on the line here. All are within reach here, I guess. I don't know. Let us know, because there are so many. We could have spent this whole podcast talking about other ones that we felt were underappreciated in one way or another. And as for our news topics, who do you think is the shadow voice actor, and why aren't they telling us? Do you want Ori 3 from Moon Studios? Do you want Ed Boon as a Mortal Kombat fighter? I mean, if you do, I'm not going to blame you, but you're not going to get it. So, you know, manage expectations. And then will you be trying to get one of those Tears of the Kingdom shirts? Or do you think they need to do better with their artwork? Let us know in the comments below. So, for Skulk and Scott and Wario Will, I am Triforce Todd. Aloha, gentlemen. We are out of time. We are not allowed. We've managed to get a level. So, raise the flag!